You're listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast?
No. This is the New Churches podcast, Todd.
What?
All right. So, yes, this is the New Churches podcast, but we are going to, we just talked
to Leon Scrum.
Yeah, Leon Scrum.
And he's
a church planter.
Dude, dropped 6 years. Gold. Yeah. All day long. So
yeah.
It is longer. It will be significantly longer.
Yeah, it's not 15 minutes. It's like 45 minutes.
But it's worth it.
Yeah. So we just interviewed him for the 5LQ podcast. If you have not yet subscribed and listened to that one, do that as well.
Absolutely.
I'm now more regularly on it.
Yes, you are.
So, but when we interviewed him, he's actually speaking at our upcoming succession conference. It's Pipeline, Succession at Every Level.
But he shows you what succession at every level really is.
Yeah.
Because it's not about senior pastor succession. And even when it is, it's not about a departure. It's about a succession of a role. It's about giving your ministry away and reproducing yourself.
Exactly. So be sure to listen to this in, because if you do not know Leon Scrump, and we'll have his information in the show notes, he planted his church 6 years ago. There are over 1,000 people. And number one thing to get, I mean, not that the size of your church is what success truly is determined by. It is a metric, but he gets leadership development and he gets discipleship.
Oh, and P.S. he failed 3 times before this happened.
Exactly. So like,
I want to do that.
Exactly.
6 years.
So one thing that you will hear him say, but he, before he started, he had a plan to develop his leaders and to disciple them before. And even as he's now in and is even given away organizing and planning the weekly worship Sunday gathering, he is now focusing on what does that next 5 years look like, and how do we continue to equip the saints for the work of ministry, right? And also disciple people, because we're all on the same mission. So let's listen in.
You're listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Todd Adkins, and I'm here with Daniel M.
Hello.
And also, we have a wonderful guest today. We've had him on before, so you'll probably be familiar with who he is and his voice. That is Mr. Leon Scrump.
How are we?
Man, that's low.
That is. Bring it down.
Oh, fuss up.
Hello.
Just a reminder, listeners, who you are, where you're at. And by the way, he will be at our Pipeline conference this fall. He's there speaking along with many other guests, including John Piper, H.B. Charles, Geiger, Rainer, Bob Russell. For those of you who don't know who Bob Russell is, shame on you. You should know who Bob Russell is.
You should go back and listen to the podcast we have with Bob Russell.
It is gold. Because this is a guy who built a church from like a small group to 20,000+ people and gave it away when he still had plenty of gas in the tank. He's the only person I know of at that level of, you know, giga church that has 2 generations of succession, because he hired both Dave Stone and Kyle Ottoman.
Yeah.
And you've seen that succession happen. So that's the kind of legacy, man. That's the kind of legacy I want.
Yeah. And he's still mentoring pastors and bringing people over to a farm.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. Awesome. All right. But we're not here with Bob Russell.
Yeah.
We're here with Leon. So tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background.
Yeah. So glad to be back with you all. I'm the senior pastor of Renovation Church in downtown Atlanta. Planted that church along with my wife and 12 other people, a small group in my living room about 6 years ago. And God has been very kind to us in these several years. And I look forward one day to being like Bob Russell and even owning a farm. So that is that is the goal, to see the favor of the Lord on this thing and then give it away when I've got plenty of gas left in the tank.
Yeah, love that. Well, let's get into our questions, Leon. So the first one is, how do you start a leadership development pipeline in a church plant?
Yeah, so I think there's 3 keys there, not only in a church plant, but in general, because what I've found is even established churches have a lack of a structured leadership development pipeline or system. And so for us, from the very beginning, we kind of asked 3 questions. 1, what is leadership? So you have to actually define what leadership is. And I mean in a concrete way. How do you define leadership? How do you define a leader in your context? Because even though there are transmutable and transmittable skills related to what a leader is, those things will be translated differently and executed differently in your context. So how do you define a leader in your context? And then how do you strategically structure around that to make sure that you are delineating between leadership development and discipleship? Yeah. And even though leadership development has components of discipleship, they are not the same.
Yeah, completely. Completely. So with the work that I lead at Lifeway Leadership, leading newchurches.com and everything we do around church planting, multi-site and multiplication, there definitely is a nuance when it comes to leadership development and pipeline in a church plant where, you know, you have multiple people doing multiple roles and it's just, it's smaller in scale versus where I was at before, and our church had 3,000 people, and we had a ton of still people were doing multiple roles, but we had a lot more people to draw from. Yeah. So what does that look like for you to keep on having a wide funnel up top so that you can be bringing, you know, moving people from the pew into being possible residents and maybe future church planters as well? How do you kind of keep that going?
Yeah. So would you like details on our pipeline or just theory?
Yeah, let's talk about details. Yeah, let's talk about your context.
Hey, here's one thing I do want to point out, and what I believe he was saying, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but when you said define a leader, you're talking about values, right?
That is correct.
Okay. Because, that is correct. I mean, especially with a church plant, man, you get one shot to say, we're going to define a leader in this way because it is going to affect and trickle into everything we do. If we want to grow our church, we got to grow our people.
Yeah,
that is precisely correct.
Well, for us,
leadership is vision plus faith plus execution. That is how we define leadership. So do you have a clear reality toward which you are going? Do you actually believe that this is what God has called you to do, the direction that he's called you into? Because I don't know where I heard it the first time, but I heard someone say that you're not a leader if no one's following you. You're just taking a walk, right? So you have to have a clear direction where you're going. You have to have faith to believe that God is actually calling you to that direction, to that destination. And then you have to be able to execute on that, to be able to activate the necessary pieces to see that become a reality. So for us, that is the rudimentary definition of leadership. And then execution broken down, being able to do that through other people. Okay, so that's part one. A leader for us is exactly what you said, Todd. It's values. So how do I create an environment where you begin to think through the lens of the values that create our culture? And that will be different everywhere you go. So someone who is a harmonizer, we'll grab that term out of the sky, may not do well in an entrepreneurial culture because they will always want everyone to feel good about the decision. But in a fast-moving entrepreneurial culture, then that's not really the very best value to be expressed. So where they may be a good leader in another context, they're not going to be a great leader in our context. And so you have to be able to define not generally and spatially what a leader is, but what is a leader here? And how do we develop the skills to complement the values that make us who and what we are? And then, as I said, distinguishing that from discipleship. So for us, to your question, Daniel, we have always had an idea that we're trying to work ourselves out of a job. So there's never been a point in the life of this church where I have not had either staff or volunteer, one, two, three different people that I am walking through a process of understanding exactly how I do what I do. So in the beginning, before we had the space because we're renting schools, and before we had the team, the bandwidth to do formal curriculum and things like that, which is what we do now. The idea was to grab two or three people and make sure they understood exactly how you do what you do.
Okay, so very apprentice, life on life,
which we haven't lost that aspect of, but now we've been able to formalize more structures around it. And even then, distinguishing it from discipleship. Yeah. So I'm not so much working on your character, though that is important. And I'm not working on your doctrinal knowledge, though that is important. I want to impart to you the skills to be able to execute on this thing that I am doing through the lens of the values that shape our culture in an excellent way that can be replicated in others. Yeah. And continue to give that away as much and as often as possible. And so that keeps the funnel wide. And then especially when you have a rubric for doing that. So our rubric for doing it from the very beginning was I do, you watch, we talk about it. We do, we talk about it. You do, I watch, we talk about it. And when I came to the place where I can watch you do that and feel like you can do that, and this is very, very important, at 80% of the skill level at which I believe I'm doing that, then I have to release you to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And one of the things that slow down leadership development and leadership growth is we want people to be able to do what we do at the level that we do it right out of the gate before they're ready to lead. And that's just not possible.
Yeah. And without spending enough time on articulating your unique values, then you're not actually able to fully give authority and give permission to the person to lead, because yes, they may do it at 80% of your what they've seen you do, but that's once right. they're on their own, if they don't have the same values as you or as the church, it's just going to drift.
Savvy people will outweigh savvy policy.
Every time.
And what you're wanting, when I say the word savvy, I'm really talking about a wisdom, a prudence in the context that they're in. Yeah. So it's not just how would a good leader make this decision. It's how would a good leader in my context, in my church, looking through the lenses of our values, make this decision.
That is exactly right. And then operating in incredible intentionality in that regard.
What I love about what we're talking about here is a lot of times we'll talk to guys who, you know, they'll look at pipeline, they'll look at us and they'll be like, oh, you're pragmatist. But what you have just described, and they'll swing in it, oh, it's organic, it's life on life. But what you've described is something that they would adhere to. It's just, no, you actually have a framework that you're walking through to do that.
Yeah.
Life on life.
Yeah.
Piece of it.
That's exactly right.
All right. Let's move on to question two. And that is, how do you develop people? Not just fill in the gaps in leadership and, but how do you develop people for specific roles?
So this has evolved obviously over the years of our church. Right now we have internships, apprenticeships, residencies, and people actually fill out an application to come through that process. We help them to assess where their strengths and where their weaknesses are. We are a strengths-based entity, if you will. So I don't want to build you up in your weaknesses. I want to build you up in your strength, and I want to shore you up with people who are strong in your weaknesses so that you have a more rounded out team. So that's one way that we do that now, more formalized. When we were starting, and I imagine that's kind of the impetus for this conversation, we were starting as a church plant because we didn't have applications and curriculum and forms and things of that nature. We kind of had a round robin process where we would pull in 10, 12, 15 people at a time and let them serve under different leaders in different departments for an allotted amount of time. And where we saw them begin to shine and show those gifts, well, then we parsed them out to those different teams and began to really dig down into the necessary skills and the necessary aptitudes to be able to serve in those roles with excellence and with specificity. So everybody on my team, for instance, right now, everybody on my senior leadership team, they started off at different staff levels and different staff roles. And I think if you interviewed our team, which my whole team will be at the conference in the fall, they will tell you that every one of them has had multiple jobs. Not that they were doing multiple jobs at the same time, even, but they have literally had multiple jobs as over the course of the life of our church.
Yeah.
As they were kind of honing where they were most gifted, and not only where they were most gifted, but where they could replicate themselves.
Yeah, I love that. So you talked about a few different of the roles, but surely not everyone is going to be a resident, right? Not everyone. So talk to us about development, what development looks like for the person who comes once a month or once every other week, or is volunteering once a month in a ministry area, all the way up to, I guess we understand the whole idea of residency, you're committed, there's a term, et cetera. But what does it look like at those volunteer leader levels?
Yeah, I mean, this is really multifaceted for us. So let me just talk about our ambassadors.
Okay.
That's one part of our development. We don't call them volunteers.
Okay.
You don't volunteer for the kingdom.
Okay. Okay. But functionally, if you're a volunteer, if you're leading self, you call them ambassadors.
That's exactly right. Okay. So that's what I'm saying. This is actually into the beginning of our development.
Yeah, that's good.
So if you come on a Sunday, you're going to fill out a card, hopefully. And then we're going to invite you to an environment called First Look Lunch. And at First Look Lunch, you're going to hear the vision, values, and strategy of Renovation Church. You're going to hear the story of how we went from my living room to what we are now. Hopefully, you'll be intrigued by that. And if you're intrigued by that, then you're going to be pulled into an environment that we call Renovation 101. And for 5 weeks, we get into the back of house of Renovation Church. How do we do leadership? How do we do eldership? How do we do leadership development? What are women's roles in a healthy, please hear me say, healthy complementarian church? Yeah. And how do those things flesh out? The third week of Renovation 101, you can sign up to be a part of a ministry team. All of our staff and ambassador leaders come and they do a pitch about 60 seconds apiece to say what it is that they do, why they do it, how they do it, how it fits into the vision and the strategy of our church, and how you can be involved. So then you sign up. You sign up to be a part of the worship team. Once a quarter, we're going to do an ambassador rally where I gather everyone in a big room and I impart vision. I remind them of the importance of what they do. I remove the term volunteer and tell them you're not just a volunteer in everything that you do, from saying hello to somebody at the front door to emptying the trash on Communion Sunday, et cetera. You are an ambassador for Christ. You are making an appeal through your life and through your presentation for someone to take one step closer to Jesus and his church. Now, that language is couched in our vision for why we do what we do on Sunday morning. And so we develop them around that vision and that value. So they're told, you're not volunteers, you're ambassadors. You're not just here giving your time, but you're actually representing Jesus in everything that you do. So that happens once a quarter. In each of those ministry departments, they do a retrain once a quarter as well.
Okay.
So we're talking about 6 times a year. You, just as a quote volunteer leader, are getting vision directly from the senior pastor in this rally of several hundred people, being reminded why it is that you do what you do and how it's related to the vision and the strategy of the church. And then your department head, either paid or not, is spending another time in that same quarter retraining you specifically on how those values find expression in the team that you're on.
That's good.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you articulated that very well.
I do want to go back though, because before you ask that follow-up question, I really want to point something out. So I have been in a room full of mega church pastors doing pipeline stuff, and I knew that if I started preaching Ephesians 4, they would say, I've preached it 5 times, I preached it better than you. So one of the things I did was I asked them, hey, tell me about your best leader. Tell me about the best guy on your team. Don't tell me, tell the guys at your table. So I let them gush, you know, over the best guys on their team for a few moments. And then I kind of stopped them right in the middle and said, did you build them or did you buy them?
Mm.
And it just went, it was brutal. But that was the way to get back to Ephesians 4 and actually look at it. Because they're right. They would have preached it better than me. But now once you do that, then it reframes everything.
That's right.
What you said earlier about your staff was extremely telling. Mm. There is no one that you bought. Everyone has been built and everyone has come through multiple ministry areas. And here's the kicker. And Daniel can attest to this. And I don't know if you can see, but
you got goosebumps.
This stands up on my arm because what you said was we figure out what God has made them to do. And then the way that we figure out where they're supposed to be is where they're multiplying themselves.
That's right.
So whenever we're out preaching pipeline, we say, hey, success is not progression through the pipeline. Success isn't not becoming Leon. Success is becoming who God's created you to be and multiplying yourself there.
That's exactly right.
So if you're a leader, you're supposed to multiply yourself as a leader.
Yeah.
So, man, I just love a very practical example that you've given us. And even from a church planting point of view, hey, this is very possible. Especially if you lay the foundations in the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredibly possible. And honestly, I get a little frustrated when I hear guys complain about a lack of resources to develop leaders. And I've told them, even in our network in Acts 29, I'm like, you're not thinking scale. You want to do what the village is doing. You're not the village. Okay. So you're not going to be able to get, Larry Osborne to come in and teach on leadership to your team. But you can take Larry Osborne from his book and make it live for your team with intentionality and begin to develop them in that way. And so really, it really has been a benefit to us. We've only made one outside hire in 6 years, and it's the only one that failed. And everybody else has come up through the life of our church.
Was it a culture value issue or?
It was a cultural value issue. Absolutely. And a refusal to adhere to the process.
Yeah.
So I've got two guys on my team right now who thought they were church planters. Mm. And this is not that conversation. But there are far too many people planting churches who should not be planting churches.
Yeah.
And one of them, literally, this was, 2 weeks ago, so I didn't even have this conversation in view. He came into my office and he said, thank you. He said, I came here believing that I was an entrepreneur, and I'm not. I'm an intrapreneur. And being a part of this team has shown me that I don't build systems. I mold systems. I don't have far-reaching vision. But within a vision, I can multiply beautiful things. Yeah. And I would have never learned that had I not been in this environment.
Yeah, that reminds me of two things. There's this one guy who submitted a question to our New Churches podcast. And he was like, I'm early 20s, just graduating seminary. I feel like God's calling me to church plant. Should I go plant a church or should I go spend a few years at another church and learn? And we were like, oh yeah, definitely spend a few years and learn under someone else. And that reminds me of something Matt Chandler shared with our community. He was like, there are too many guys who have angst in their heart and stupid in their mind. And all they really need to do is learn how to submit and grow in another context before they go out. But it's this whole comparison where it's like, look what Leon's has done or look what, this guy's done by this age and I need to go. And it's like, man, success is not being the other person.
Yeah.
Right. It's becoming who God has called you to be in his timing.
Yeah. Well, then everybody's narrative and pace is different. So people look at renovation, 6 years old, we're about 1,200 people in the urban center, which is almost impossible, but they don't know. We failed three times before we ever got off.
Yeah.
We had three launch teams blow up before we ever got off the ground. They don't know that I spent half a decade submitting myself to leaders that I knew I could outlead.
Yeah.
But it wasn't about my skill to outlead them. It was about what God was doing in my heart to submit to the process, to not rush the process. And everybody wants to be a finished product, but nobody wants to go through the fire,
That's true.
And you cannot you cannot be what God would have you to be until you go through that fire.
Yeah. So that's a good transition to our third question, which is focused on church planters. What areas of leadership development do church planters often overlook?
Is this really for new churches, Daniel?
No, it isn't. No, but
did you just not tell me?
No, it's who I am, man.
We should double post this.
We should. We will. We will do it. Yeah.
So what areas of leadership do church planters often overlook?
Yeah.
All areas of leadership.
Great. Next question.
I mean that in earnest. I've probably assessed 100 planters over the last couple of years. And I've met two that had a leadership development plan.
Wow.
And so, if you don't have a plan for making leaders, I don't know what you think is going to happen if God actually blesses your church with growth.
Mm.
You're going to have a nightmare on your hands. And I've been party to that nightmare, and I'm sure you have as well, working with planters.
Yeah.
On more than one occasion that God actually decides to bless them with growth, and they've got nobody. To help them even not only manage it, but multiply.
Yeah.
And so I honestly, if I can say this so plainly, if you don't have a leadership development plan for years 1 to 5 and how that's going to evolve over years 1 to 5 with as many of the variables as you can consider in that, then you have already failed at planting a church.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't do it.
Okay, so I do want to make sure that, you know, everybody listening does get benefit from what you're talking about. So what about years 5 and onward?
Well, years 5 and onward, you should be beginning to refine that. And so hear me, let me take a step back and say it again. I'm talking about before day 1, you should have thought through years 1 to 5.
Yeah.
By the time you're in year 3, you should be thinking about years 5 to 10.
Mm.
By the time you're in year 7, you should be thinking about years 15 to 20.
Yeah.
If you're the visionary leader, then you should always be thinking about how this system needs to flex, change, or be abandoned in order to continue to make leaders that can multiply themselves and manage and replicate the blessing of God on your church.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge, not only for church plants, but for churches of every age and every size, because leadership development is often one of those fires that you just put it out. Oh, someone leaves or a volunteer is not there. You don't have enough people serving the nursery. Just get someone. Just replace someone. It is replacement. Mm-hmm. Because Sunday comes around, right? You got to find your curriculum. You got to preach a message. You got to, do pastoral care. There are all of these other issues or elements or things that take up our time that unless you are approaching your church with, leadership development with an incredible intentionality. And that's what I was hearing you say.
Yes, sir.
An incredible intentionality. It just won't happen because there's other things, other fires that need to be put out first.
Yeah. There always will be. And honestly, even as I talk, I can think of the varying ways that we could have done this better over the years.
Mm.
And the ways in which we've had to step back and remind ourselves that this is a multiplication model, not an addition model. And so we're going to slow down. We're going to sacrifice some numerical growth during this season. And we're going to widen our foundation instead of trying to build a skyscraper on top of toothpicks.
Yeah.
And make sure that we actually have the base we need to be able to be who God is making.
So obviously, if you're talking about a plan from 1 to 3, and then we're talking about, we're not talking about replacement, we're talking about reproduction.
That's exactly right.
Which, I love the, your analogy of foundation as well. So looking at that, how do leaders at all levels, how do they know when it's time to let responsibility go and allow someone else to lead in an area of ministry, especially when you know, it may be that it may be that they look around and I'm like, well, I've got plenty of leaders. Why do I need to reproduce more? Or why does this person need, you know, more responsibility? You know, I don't know that I have, all I have left is my responsibility. Like, mm-hmm. can you flesh that out? So how do you know when it's time to let that go and allow somebody else to lead?
Well, I think there's two ways. One is God breathes on your ministry, and there's too much to get done for the amount of people that you have. So you should, you know, for me at least, in our entrepreneurial model, so I'm not saying this is for everyone, but this is going back to the earlier illustration of a harmonizer in an entrepreneurial model. Yeah. For me, I always want to be on the edge of lacking the resources we need to manage and maintain the growth that God is giving. I want to be right there because it keeps a constant pressure to reproduce in healthy ways. And it puts you in a place where you say, okay, no, we're gonna back off. We're gonna take the gas off here. We're gonna shore up the foundation like we were just talking about, and make sure that when we get to that edge again, that we're not in danger of running right off the cliff.
Yeah.
So that's one. The other side of it for me is experiencing the tension that is there when you insert yourself and you're not needed, and there will be tension. And you're inserting yourself into an area where you've begun to give away responsibility, and not only responsibility, but authority, and which are two very, very different things. Giving you a job and giving you the authority to decide how that job gets done are two very, very different
things. Yeah, but the best leaders know that
they're
two sides of the same coin.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And so you run to that point of tension and you realize that I'm actually in the way here and are able to acknowledge that. I'm kind of in that place for myself personally right now. I've just pulled myself out of two rooms that I've been in for a long time. In one of those rooms, I definitely overstayed my welcome and did not adhere to my own thinking on development. In the other room, it was just the right time. I could feel the tension. I could feel the team trying to decide who to look to, who to talk to, who should answer this question, should you know, this division leader answer this question, or should PL answer this question? And I felt that tension. And that's the point at which I say, you know what? It's time for me to be out of this room. It's time for me to hand this over completely. I'm not going to go directly to these department heads anymore for anything. I'm going to run everything through our division leader and let him have the space to breathe and move and shape this within the box and the breadth of our vision and our strategy and our philosophy and our values, the way that he would shape it.
Yeah. I mean, part of what I'm hearing from you, Leonce, is this sense of self-awareness, right?
Well, that's the first quality of a leader.
Yeah.
So for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
So talking about defining a leader, the first quality of a leader is being self-aware.
Yeah.
And I would go so far as to say, if you're not self-aware, you're not a leader.
Yeah. And because if you're not self-aware, what happens is you begin, you know, with this question, you begin burning the candle at both ends.
Yes.
You have this sense of, hey, I am Jesus. I am the savior, right? Nothing is going to be as good unless I do it.
Uh-huh.
Right. And then you can never scale. Right. And yeah, you're giving away, you know, bunny ear responsibilities, but there's no authority because you are the one that, If it's not you, it's not going to get done, right? And that's just a lack of spiritual maturity. That's a lack of self-awareness.
Yeah.
That's disabling, not developing.
Yeah.
It was completely disabling. And it really, Larry Osborne talks about this in his book. It really clips the wings of young eagles who are looking for room to fly.
Yeah.
And so you can't have a succession plan if you've got no one to come up and succeed you in what you are doing.
Yeah.
And so if you're not aware of being able to lift your hand, so to speak, and continue to broaden the realm of other people's responsibilities, then you can't replicate yourself.
Yeah.
And this is hard. I think there's one side of that, if I can give a little grace here, at least from my experience, there's one side of that where it is like, yeah, nobody can do it like me, so I've got to do it. And this real Jesus mentality, quote unquote. But there's another side, at least what I experienced, was a bit of guilt where I was like, man, I don't feel like I got a lot to do around here right now. Am I earning my keep, so to speak?
Yeah.
Because they're busting their butts and they're busting their butts and they're handling all this stuff. And I've given them all this responsibility and authority and they've asked for it. And all of a sudden, I've got 15 extra hours in my week.
Yeah.
What am I going to do with this?
Yeah.
And now, again, if you are leading rightly, then you'll immediately snap out of it and say, well, what am I going to do with it? I'm going to sit here and I'm going to dream about the next 5 years and I'm going to start getting some things on paper for where we're going and who we'll need and how that's going to flesh itself out. But there was an initial guilt, especially with this last change for us. So for the first time in the last 6 years, I am not directly involved in the execution of any ministry around here. Other than what I do in preaching and leading our staff team. And it was a difficult transition, not because I thought that I had to be the one to do it, but because I was like, man, what am I really doing around here? Am I earning my keep? Is it time for me to step aside? Is it time for me to hand this over to one of these other leaders completely? And after meeting with our board and talking through that process, of course, you know, everybody agreed that wasn't the best decision right now. The best decision is to continue to lead from a high level.
Yeah.
But at first, there was some inherent guilt with feeling like my hands were more empty than they should
have. Yeah, and expectations of what a pastor should be, what a pastor should do, both self and then what other people are placing on you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
No, now, Leon, so I love how what we just talked about, and Todd, I don't know if this was strategic in the question, in the nature of the question, but what we just talked about was succession. And you're speaking at our succession conference. You're bringing your team to our conference. Yeah, and I love that because what we just talked about was succession, but it wasn't succession at the senior leader level, right? It wasn't that you were leaving the church, right? You're still there. You're still serving.
It's a story of succession at the senior level that is not a departure.
Yeah, story. Exactly. And that's what this conference is all about. We're talking about succession at every level. It's really a nuanced focus on leadership pipeline. So Leon's, can you close us out with a story? Maybe a story about succession in your ministry.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just told you.
Yeah.
That's closing prayer.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But our Sunday gatherings was kind of the last frontier.
Okay.
As far as what I had my hand directly involved.
Yeah, and that's so hard to give up as a senior.
Oh,
leader.
Man. It really, really was. And there's still some pain of loss that I'm still processing. And nothing has gone wrong. In fact, there's several things that have gotten better because where my attention is diverted to both the whole and this particular area of ministry, the brother that I've replaced myself with, Sam Kang, his attention is wholly on this.
Yeah.
And his eyes are completely on this. And so there are little things that we were just kind of allowing to go that have actually gotten tighter since he's taken responsibility. But there was a great difficulty in the first Sunday I walked in and I had nothing to do but preach. And it was hard. I was like, oh, I'm going to go pray. Nope. I don't pray with the band. I'm going to go down and check. Nope. I don't do that anymore. And so I just came and I sat in my office and I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to pray.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get ready to go and preach my sermon. And preach a few times today.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to be on my way.
That's good.
And it really has been a beautiful thing to see him spread his wings even more and put in new processes and clean up things that I have been meaning to get to for some time. And within 2 weeks, he's taking care of these things because his eyes are solely on making our Sunday experience the very best it can be. And so he's actually doing the job better than I was doing it as I was getting ready to hand it off.
Well, this has been a great conversation for us.
Yeah,
I wish we had it more often, actually. Yeah. It's obvious that you're a church that does practice leadership pipeline. And so for some of the listeners who are pastors, half of our listeners aren't even, they're not on staff in ministry. They just love leadership. So I think the beautiful thing about this is our vision would be to see the local church as the leadership locus for the community. Like, yes. Man, if you want a good leader, you get somebody from this church, because we should be producing better leaders than anybody else on the planet, mm-hmm. just because of the task that we have been given, the responsibility that we've been given. And so I love seeing that happen in your church. And so, man, we're super excited to have you at the conference. I'm super excited to have your staff team there. After the podcast, I want to talk a little bit more about that, how we can serve them while they're here. Man, we're excited, and would love to have you on the podcast for a third time sometime in the future.
Which
I would love to.
You'd be the first, by the way. I know. Well, Christine, has Christine been on three times? She's coming up. She's in the queue. Yeah. She may have.
I would be overjoyed to do so. And if I can give just a last word to the folks listening.
Absolutely.
Based on just what you just said, Todd, it has really been a blessing. We have Chick-fil-A executives in our church. We have tech executives in our church. And they have been developed here. And their company cultures and their company pipelines and their company development is stronger for it. They're getting fast promotions because in a kingdom-centric entity where they have learned to value developing people not as a means to an end, not as a part of a cog, but as an expression of human flourishing, they're taking that into the business world.
I love that.
And they're killing the game, man. And it really is a beautiful thing.
It's a good deal.
Very good deal.
Well, thanks again for listening into the New Churches podcast. Be sure to leave a... yes, a hybrid version. Be sure to leave a rating and review. And we'll catch you next time.